Chapter 9. Monday morning found Tom Sawyer miserable. Monday morning always found him so because it began another week's slow suffering in school. He generally began that day with wishing he had had no intervening holiday. It made the going into captivity and fetters again so much more odious. Tom lay thinking. Presently it occurred to him that he wished he was sick. Then he could stay home from school. Here was a vague possibility. He canvassed his system. No ailment was found, and he investigated again. This time he thought he could detect colicky symptoms, and he began to encourage them with considerable hope. But they soon grew feeble, and presently died wholly away. He reflected further. Suddenly he discovered something. One of his upper front teeth was loose. This was lucky. He was about to begin to groan, as a starter, as he called it, when it occurred to him that, if he came into court with that argument, his aunt would pull it out, and that would hurt. So he thought he would hold the tooth in reserve for the present, and seek further. Nothing offered for some little time, and then he remembered hearing the doctor tell about a certain thing that laid up a patient for 2 or 3 weeks and threatened to make him lose a finger. So the boy eagerly drew his sore toe from under the sheet and held it up for inspection. But now he did not know the necessary symptoms. However, it seemed well worth while to chance it, so he fell to groaning with considerable spirit. But Sid slept on unconscious. Tom groaned louder and fancied that he began to feel pain in the toe. No result from Sid. Tom was panting with his exertions by this time. He took a rest, and then swelled himself up, and fetched a succession of admirable groans. Sid snored on. Tom was aggravated. He said, "Sid, Sid," and shook him. This course worked well, and Tom began to groan again. Sid yawned, stretched, then brought himself up on his elbow with a snort, and began to stare at Tom. Tom went on groaning. Sid said, "Tom, say, Tom." No response. "Here, Tom. Tom. What is the matter, Tom?" And he shook him, and looked in his face anxiously. Tom moaned out, "Oh, don't, Sid. Don't joggle me. Why, what's the matter, Tom? I must call Auntie." "No, never mind. It'll be over by and by, maybe. Don't call anybody." "But I must." "Don't groan so, Tom, it's awful. How long you been this way?" "Hours. Ouch. Oh, don't stir so, Sid, you'll kill me." "Tom, why didn't you wake me sooner?" "Oh, Tom, don't. It makes my flesh crawl to hear you." "Tom, what is the matter?" "I forgive you everything, Sid." "Groan. Everything you've ever done to me. When I'm gone, oh, Tom, you ain't dying, are you?" "Don't, Tom, oh, don't. Maybe, I forgive everybody, Sid." "Groan. Tell them so, Sid. And Sid, you give my window sash and my cat with one eye to that new girl that's come to town, and tell her." But Sid had snatched his clothes and gone. Tom was suffering in reality now, so handsomely was his imagination working, and so his groans had gathered quite a genuine tone. Sid flew downstairs and said, "Oh, Aunt Polly, come. Tom's dying. Dying. Yes'm. Don't wait, come quick. Rubbish. I don't believe it." But she fled upstairs, nevertheless, with Sid and Mary at her heels. And her face grew white too, and her lip trembled. When she reached the bedside she gasped out, "You, Tom. Tom, what's the matter with you?" "Oh, Auntie, I'm, what's the matter with you? What is the matter with you, child?" "Oh, Auntie, my sore toe's mortified." The old lady sank down into a chair, and laughed a little, then cried a little, then did both together. This restored her and she said, "Tom, what a turn you did give me. Now you shut up that nonsense and climb out of this." The groan ceased and the pain vanished from the toe. The boy felt a little foolish, and he said, "Aunt Polly, it seemed mortified, and it hurt, so I never minded my tooth at all." "Your tooth, indeed. What's the matter with your tooth? One of them's loose, and it aches perfectly awful. There, there, now, don't begin that groaning again. Open your mouth. Well, your tooth is loose, but you're not going to die about that. Mary, get me a silk thread, and a chunk of fire out of the kitchen. Tom said. Oh please, Auntie, don't pull it out. It don't hurt anymore. I wish I may never stir if it does. Please don't, Auntie. I don't want to stay home from school. Oh, you don't you? So all this row was because you thought you'd get to stay home from school and go fishing? Tom, I love you so, and you seem to try every way you can to break my old heart with your outrageousness. By this time the dental instruments were ready. The old lady made one end of the silk thread fast to Tom's tooth with a loop, and tied the other to the bedpost. Then she seized the chunk of fire, and suddenly thrust it almost into the boy's face. The tooth hung dangling by the bedpost now. But all trials bring their compensations. As Tom wended to school after breakfast, he was the envy of every boy he met, because the gap in his upper row of teeth enabled him to expectorate in a new and admirable way. He gathered quite a following of lads interested in the exhibition, and one that had cut his finger, and had been a center of fascination and homage up to this time, now found himself suddenly without an adherent, and shorn of his glory. His heart was heavy, and he said with a disdain which he did not feel, that it wasn't anything to spit like Tom Sawyer. But another boy said, sour grapes. And he wandered away a dismantled hero. Shortly Tom came upon the juvenile pariah of the village, Huckleberry Finn, son of the town drunkard. Huckleberry was cordially hated and dreaded by all the mothers of the town, because he was idle and lawless and vulgar and bad, and because all their children admired him so, and delighted in his forbidden society, and wished they dared to be like him. Tom was like the rest of the respectable boys, in that he envied Huckleberry his gaudy outcast condition, and was under strict orders not to play with him. So he played with him every time he got a chance. Huckleberry was always dressed in the cast-off clothes of full-grown men, and they were in perennial bloom and fluttering with rags. His hat was a vast ruin with a wide crescent lopped out of its brim. His coat, when he wore one, hung nearly to his heels, and at the rear were buttons far down the back. But one suspender supported his trousers. The seat of the trousers bagged low and contained nothing, the fringed legs dragged in the dirt, when not rolled up. Huckleberry came and went, at his own free will. He slept on doorsteps in fine weather and in empty hogsheads in wet. He did not have to go to school or to church, or call any being master or obey anybody. He could go fishing or swimming when and where he chose, and stay as long as it suited him. Nobody forbade him to fight. He could sit up as late as he pleased. He was always the first boy that went barefoot in the spring and the last to resume leather in the fall. He never had to wash, nor put on clean clothes. He could swear wonderfully. In a word, everything that goes to make life precious that boy had. So thought every harassed, hampered, respectable boy in St. Petersburg. Tom hailed the romantic outcast. Hello, Huckleberry. Hello yourself, and see how you like it. What's that you got? Dead cat. Lem see him, Huck. My, he's pretty stiff. Where'd you get him, bottom off nay boy? What did you give? I give a blue ticket and a bladder that I got at the slaughterhouse. Where'd you get the blue ticket? Bought it off Ben Rogers 2 weeks ago for a hoop stick. Say, what is dead cats good for, Huck? Good for? Cure warts with. No. Is that so? I know something that's better. I bet you don't. What is it? Why, spunk water. Spunk water. I wouldn't give a darn for spunk water. You wouldn't you? Do you ever try it? No, I ain't. But Bob Tanner did. Who told you so? Why, he told Jeff Thatcher, and Jeff told Johnny Baker, and Johnny told Jim Hollis, and Jim told Ben Rogers, and Ben told a nigger, and the nigger told me. There now. Well, what of it? They'll all lie. Leastways all but the nigger. I don't know him. But I never see a nigger that wouldn't lie. Shucks. Now you tell me how Bob Tanner done it, Huck. Why, he took and dipped his hand in a rotten stump where the rainwater was. In the daytime? Certainly. With his face to the stump? Yes. Least I reckon so. Did he say anything? I don't reckon he did. I don't know. Aha! Talk about trying to cure warts with spunk water such a blame fool way as that. Why, that ain't a-going to do any good. You got to go all by yourself, to the middle of the woods, where you know there's a spunk water stump, and just as it's midnight you back up against the stump, and jam your hand in and say, barley corn, engine meal shorts, spunk water, swallow these warts, apostrophe, and then walk away quick 11 steps, with your eyes shut, and then turn around 3 times and walk home without speaking to anybody. Because if you speak, the charm's busted. Well, that sounds like a good way, but that ain't the way Bob Tanner done. No, sir, you can bet he didn't, because he's the wartiest boy in this town, and he wouldn't have a wart on him if he'd knowed how to work spunk water. I've took off thousands of warts off of my hands that way, Huck. I play with frogs, so much that I've always got considerable many warts. Sometimes I take 'em off with a bean. Yes, bean's good. I've done that. Have you? What's your way? You take and split the bean, and cut the wart so as to get some blood, and then you put the blood on one piece of the bean, and take and dig a hole, and bury it about midnight at the crossroads, in the dark of the moon, and then you burn up the rest of the bean. You see, that piece that's got the blood on it will keep drawing and drawing, trying to fetch the other piece to it, and so that helps the blood to draw the wart, and pretty soon off she comes. Yes, that's it, Huck, that's it. Though when you're burying it, if you say down bean, off wart, come no more to bother me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it's better. That's the way Joe Harper does, and he's been nearly to Coonville and most everywheres. But say, how do you cure 'em with dead cats? Why, you take your cat, and go and get in the graveyard long about midnight, when somebody that was wicked has been buried. And when it's midnight a devil will come, or maybe two or three, but you can't see 'em, you can only hear something like the wind, or maybe hear 'em talk. And when they're taking that feller away, you heave your cat after 'em and say, devil follow corpse, cat follow devil, warts follow cat, I'm done with ye. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that'll fetch any wart. Sounds right. Do you ever try it, Huck? No, but old Mother Hopkins told me. Well, I reckon it's so then. Because they say she's a witch. Say. Why, Tom, I know she is. She witched Pap. Pap says so his own self. He come along one day, and he see she was a-witching him, so he took up a rock, and if as he hadn't dodged, he'd a got her. Well, that very night he rolled off nay shed where he was a-layin' drunk, and broke his arm. Why, that's awful. How did he know she was a-witching him? Lord, Pap can tell, easy. Pap says when they keep looking at you right steady, they're a-witching you. Especially if they mumble. Because when they mumble they're saying the Lord's Prayer backwards. Say, Hucky, when you going to try the cat? Tonight. I reckon they'll come after old Hoss Williams tonight. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.